Mr. George Keane, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Keane?
Yes, I was born at Kingston near Portsmouth, 29th of April, 1920.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yes, I was brought up until the age of 12 by my grandparents at Andover in Hampshire. When my grandmother died, there was some problem as to where I was going to live, and eventually I went to live with my mother, who at that time was a complete stranger to me, at Oxford.
And
where I attended local elementary schools.
Was it a comfortable upbringing with your grandparents?
Oh yes, very comfortable. Yes, I received a very very comfortable upbringing with my grandparents. We didn't have much money to spend, but I was very well looked after, as my grandfather was a farm foreman, and if we had couldn't get a bit of beef to eat at the weekend, he'd go out and shoot a couple of rabbits. And whilst...
was your mother working?
No, I is this still on? Oh, well, I'll cut that bit out. My mother was a stranger to me because I was given to Granny to bring up when I was a baby, you see. And
but when you went back to her, you still...
She was more or less a stranger to me, and I had two half-brothers. And my upbringing had been different to theirs. The finest thing ever happened to me was being brought up by Granny. And when we're at Oxford... I went to the local elementary schools.
Now, how did you do at school?
That's a very difficult question. I haven't got much memory of my schools because I went to so many. I think I got most of my education from the local libraries. I was always a very good reader. And that stood me in very good stead when I joined the Navy as a boy. When I was... left school at 14.
So you left school without any qualifications?
Oh, yes, compared to today, nothing at all. When I left school at 14, my first job was as a telegram boy with the GPO at Oxford. The family left when I was about 14 and a half to go to Weston-super-Mare. Of course, in those days... I couldn't afford to stay behind at Oxford, so I went with them, and I obtained a job as a butcher. A very good job for those days, well paid, and I used to spend a lot of time going down to the, I forget the name of the place now, near Weston-super-Mare, there were a lot of old hulks, and I used to have a lot to do with the fishermen there, because I was interested in the sea.
And what had caused that? Why were you interested in the sea? Because you're pretty inland.
Just a natural thing. I did build my first boat. I had a length of timber about 9 foot long for a keel. I had two pieces about 2 foot long for a stem and a stern. And I got, at the butcher's where I worked, we had... we used a lot of stuff like breadcrumbs in round barrels, which are made of very thin wood. I cut ribs out of that, made a boat, made the frame of a boat, and I bought an old shop canvas. What do you call it? You know, you put over the shop windows.
Oh, awning.
Oh, an old awning for sixpence. I covered my frame with that, and the local councilmen were tarring a road. In those days, you had a tar engine with a chimney and a fire, and they used to leave it in all night. And when the workmen had gone, I went up and pinched a bucket of tar, and I tarred this old boat. It was very crude, and I used to go around all the little canals around Weston-super-Mare. And one day I was walking down the street and I saw this big sign, "Join the Navy and see the world."
And what year was this?
1935. So I decided that's for me. And I saved up enough money to go to Bristol on a day out. And I went down to the recruiting office and did all my exams and that, and saw the doctor there.
Now, do you remember what sort of tests and exams they gave you? I know it's a long time ago.
Oh, it is, yes. It was just general knowledge and an interview. And on the form, at the bottom of the form, was a line for your parents to sign. Well, when the chief petty officer who was interviewing us turned his back, I signed that. Nobody bothered. Nobody bothered in those days. You'd have a half-mad social worker after today, wouldn't you? And I signed on for 12 years, which started when I was 18. So I was 15 in 1 month when I went to HMS Ganges for training.
And so that you went in, start of June 1935?
End of 31st July 1935.
And you were there as a boy. Boy, were you going to be a seaman or a signaller at the time?
No. Our first month was spent in a building called the Annex.
Now, hang on a bit. Yeah, I have you. Now, let's take it. You're very young then. What happened when you first arrived? Because you're arriving as a 15-year-old lad. The village where Ganges is?
That's right. Well, I'll come on to that. Go back to that. I received a letter with a railway warrant, and I went from Bristol to London, where I was met by somebody from the Admiralty, taken across, put on the train, and I arrived at Harwich about 7 o'clock in the evening. And I very clearly remember my first supper in the Navy. It was on a tin plate. It was a roast sheep's heart with gravy, half a loaf of bread, and a big tin of this lovely thick cocoa. And that was my first meal. I never forgot it. And we put into this place called the Annex, where we had no pyjamas then. I was given this hairy shirt to wear, hairy nightshirt, which was itching all night. And that was my introduction to the Navy.
Now, can you describe the Annex? What was your accommodation like in the Annex?
Oh, as far as I can remember, it was a two-storey building. Of course, there was about 40 of us all together. And while in that, in the Annex...
What in your room? I mean, how many in a room? Or was it just one room?
Oh, I can't remember exactly now. About 40, I would say, about 40.
And what were you in, beds or hammocks? And
no, beds. And while during that month in there, we were introduced to the ways of the Navy, issued with our kit.
Now, tell me about that. What were you issued with?
Well, we were issued with blue suits, white suits, bedding, and... old blue jerseys for the winter. And one thing I remember very clearly about our clothing was we were issued with a wooden type about a half inch, it's about half, 2 inches long, half inch thick, in which your name was carved out the wood. And you used this to stamp your name in black paint on your whites, and in white paint on your blues. And you had to sew your name in using red silk thread with a chain stitch. And one clear recollection I have is my name, H.G. Keane, was very easy to do, but next to me was an Irishman named O'Shaughnessy, and he was sewing away for the whole month we were in there. And
You didn't use the H, because you're George Keane.
Yes, I always use the H, but I preferred my second name, you see.
Right, so...
My name, yeah. And
now, what about haircuts? I mean, was there...
Haircut. Amongst the kit we were issued with was a comb with 1.5 inches teeth 1.5 inches long. And we went to the barber, Royal Marine barber, And he says, "Where do you want your parting?" And he went straight over the clippers and then made the rest to match. And we all stood in front of the mirror with this comb held on our head. It was useless. And I can't remember a great deal of our life in the...
What kind of training were you doing in the annex?
Well, the initial initial drill.
How did you take to drill? You'd not done any before, I presume.
Oh, so. No, that didn't bother me at all. That.
You liked drill?
Oh, well, I enjoyed it. I couldn't. There were some aspects of it I didn't enjoy, mind you. It comes out later on. I'll just recollect my thoughts a bit now. What was I going to say? Oh, yes. While we were there, we did educational exams. And that's where my hours spent in public libraries paid off, because I was in the top 10% of the number of us that did the exam, which meant that I could either go in for accelerated seamen, as they called it, or communications. So I chose communications as a signalman.
Now, why? Why did you pick that?
Because initially the work was all in the open air.
And you fancied that?
And I fancied that.
Now, anything else happened while you were in the annex?
Not that I can say, nothing of significance.
How long were you in there for?
A month. The only shock I think I got that while I was in there was, I think, a second or third day, something like that. At 5 o'clock in the morning, we were off down to the swimming bath on the foreshore, and the instructor asked, "Are there any non-swimmers amongst you?" And I had to hold my hand up. And he said, "Right, get up on that top diving board." And I was stood up there with my hand on my hip. And he says, "What do you think? You're a bloody mannequin. Jump in." And I remember that. And for a month, it was about a month. We had two physical training sessions per week. Well, as backward swimmers, we had to go to the end of the bath for one of those. And I think it was about a month or two before I passed out swimming.
How come you'd never learnt? Because you were keen on the
where there was not. There was an old fisherman tried to teach me down at Weston-super-Mare. And have you ever seen the front at Weston-super-Mare? It's all mud. And so I was like a crab floundering around. But I soon learnt in the swimming bath at Ganges.
Did you have to pass a test?
Oh, yes.
What was it?
With a white duck suit on. And it was in the winter when I did mine. And in the morning. And the suits had been outside hanging on the line in the frost. And all frozen stiff.
But you got through it.
Oh, we got through it, yeah. I would say that, I was at Ganges. I went to sea in November 1937.
Now, we've got a fair bit more about Ganges, you know, to pick up.
Yeah.
Now, what? So when you went into the main area, what was your accommodation like there? Or was it just much the same?
It was, if I remember rightly, there were 40 of us in a single-story building. I think there were 40 of us, 20 signals and 20 wireless.
And was it a comfortable, was it a barrack room?
It was a long room with beds on either side. The first 30 foot or so as you went in was a cement floor, and the rest was polished wood blocks. And the beds were the metal beds with metal feet, and we had what were called bed jocks, which were put under the foot of each bed, like they would be put under each foot of each of those there if they were used, and to keep the metal off the polished deck. And of course, the polished deck was polished by us.
Tell me about how you cleaned the room, because that would be part of your routine, wouldn't it? Cleaning the room.
Oh yes, that's right. We weren't allowed to wear our boots. Of course, we had boots. We didn't have shoes in those days. We had boots, and we were not allowed to go onto the polished deck with boots on. Once a week, of course, all of our eating utensils were aluminium. I mean, with 40 rough lads, pottery and ordinary plates and cups and plates wouldn't have lasted very long. And when we first went into Ganges, amongst all the bits of information that we were given while we were in the annex, was one that had the rules and regulations there for the good of everybody. And if you didn't comply, you got punished. They had no excuses like they got today that Granny didn't put jam on my butty or anything like that.
Did you mind the discipline?
No, didn't bother me at all. Didn't bother me. There's been some harsh things said about a lot of the discipline at Ganges, but our instructors were quite civilised people, treated us all right, whether one or two of the seamen instructors who were a bit rough on their lads, but we were all right. I would say we were looked after very well in a rough way.
Did you get into trouble much? I mean, you've got this list of rules. Did you break the... I mean, boys are boys. Did you get in trouble much?
Well, my first bit of trouble was happened on a Wednesday. Wednesday mornings, we cleaned all our utensils with the aluminium. I know it might sound a bit peculiar now. We cleaned it with whiting paper and newspaper. And it brought the, of course, during the course of the week, it got dull, you see, and it shone after it finished. Well, this particular Wednesday, it was my job to clean the pudding basins. We call them dips. Pudding basins. Normal size pudding basins, you know. And I forgot all about it, didn't I? So during the morning, when the divisional officer came round to inspect it, they're all this beautiful bright aluminium except the pudding vases. So who's responsible for these? Signal Boy Keane, you see. Well, about two minutes later Signal Boy Keane was in front of the divisional officer being asked why he hadn't cleaned the depths. Well, the only reply I could give was quite truthful one: I've forgotten all about it. So he promptly told me that I had ways and means of improving memory and gave me 7 days jankers. meant that for an hour every afternoon, instead of going to sports, I was running around the parade ground with a rifle held above my head. And one old lag who'd always had lots of punishments, he said, "Now look, watch the instructor. When he turns his back walking up and down, rest it on your head because your arms get terrible, you know." And I had a flaming great bump on top of my head when I came away. That was the only lot I did during my time at Ganges, except when the whole mess was punished once.
What was that about?
Well, in the division we had... I can't remember the exact number now, 4 or 6 messes. We were only communications, the rest were all seamen. And we had a competition for the cleanest mess, and the prize was a cake. I think it was baked by the captain's wife. Well, instead of winning this cake, we were bottom of the league, if you like to put it that way, for cleanliness. And we had a week's what they called shotley routine punishment, the whole lot of us. It meant that you got up half an hour earlier than everybody else in the morning. And after you had your meals, you were shut out of your mess. And it was during the winter and it was damn cold. We used to go in the library and try and find a warm corner to sit on. But...
If we look at a typical day's training, that might help you remember some things. You know, just I know there's no such thing as a typical day, but sort of generally, what time would the day start for you, roughly?
Now then, wait a minute. It was half an hour earlier in summer than winter. And if I remember rightly, it was 6 o'clock in the summer and 6:30 in the winter. I might be able to vary that from, because I've got a pile of I belong to Ganges Association and I have their quarterly magazines, you know. Somebody will have mentioned it sometime. I think that was it.
So what would you do when you got up?
Well, first of all, we'd have a snack of biscuits and cocoa.
Straight away?
Yeah. Well, after you've washed and cleaned yourself up and got dressed. And then you went to a cleaning station.
What do you mean by cleaning station?
Well, all the boys had different cleaning jobs to do immediately after getting up. I remember my first one was the 6-inch gun battery, where you scrub the deck in bare feet. And then I went on later on to cleaning the boats out first thing in the morning. That was a hell of a job.
How did you go about cleaning the 6-inch gun battery? It sounds a hell of a job.
Scrubbed the floor with a long-handled scrubber.
Oh, you weren't cleaning the guns?
Not the guns. Just the floor. Just the cleanliness of the building, yeah. Cleanliness of the building. And later on, I qualified for go and clean the boats out in the morning instead.
So after you'd done this cleaning session?
Then you went for breakfast.
We'll do all the food together. You know, you mentioned the first meal you had, but what did you think of the food? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, take me through the food. What was it like?
Well, the only breakfast I can remember clearly is Sunday, because it was always bacon and egg on Sunday. That was the posh breakfast of the week. Our meals... A few of us boys would act as duty cooks, and it was our job to go to the galley, which was about 5 minutes walk away, and get the food, which was in tins, and we had to share it out amongst ourselves. And of course the snag was the tins were never covered, not like they are today. They're open tins, and sometimes if you dawdled on the way, the food was cold before you got it dished out. It was a rough and ready way of dishing out the food.
Now, what was it like when you got it? Say at lunch, at dinner, I don't know what you call it, the midday meal.
The food I would describe as reasonably good. It wasn't like home cooking, reasonably good, but we were always hungry because we were all so active.
Was there enough of it then? Sounds like not.
There was enough to feed us and keep us going, but if we'd had a chance to have a bit more, we would have done. For example, on Wednesday afternoons, we always did cleaning jobs on Wednesday afternoons as well. I mean, after our lunch, we all fell in and we detailed for various jobs. And I always used to try way up to where I could stand to see if I got picked to go down to the galley to clean all the tins and that for the chef, because they always used to keep a big couple of tins of big boiled suet pudding, you know, what we call figgy duff with raisins and whatnot in. And our reward for cleaning out all the tins for the chef would be a big wad of that weighing about a pound. And you never shared it with anybody else.
But what I mean, so the food was, as far as you were concerned, was good.
Well, I wouldn't say it was excellent. It was reasonably good. I mean, in those days, comparing it to today, of course, it was a poor diet. But for the times, it was reasonably good.
Now, after breakfast, then, in this typical day...
Then you get cleaned up in our white, duck suits during the winter and blues during duck suits during the summer and blues during the winter. Our summer started at, end of March and finished beginning of October.
So what would you do? You got cleaned up.
Well, then we'd go and fall in for divisions on the playground.
Now, what was divisions? Just explain what it was.
Well, your division was each division, as I explained, had, say, 4 to 6 messes in it. And you fell in as a division on the playground. So you'd have one division at the beginning, another division here, another division there on the prayer ground, and then you'd have your prayers or whatever. And us signal boys, they used to put a signal on the mast, and one of us signal boys in the first division had to go and report to the officer on the parade ground what the meaning of the signal was. And after divisions, then you went to your various instructions. You went to school, or you went to more sessions, or...
Well, let's do them one by one. School. What was school? Is that educational?
Educational school, where I personally came up subjects which I'm not certainly not done at elementary school, such as magnetism, electricity, and some mathematics. And of course, then we had, besides the ordinary school, at our signal school, we had straightforward signals, flags.
I'll come back to that. Yeah. So they were topping up your education.
Oh yes, definitely so. Definitely so, yes. Yes. You did another couple of years of schooling, actually, when you boil it all down.
Did you feel the benefit of that?
Because
you had a disrupted education.
That's
you
right.
Self-taught in many ways.
Yes, I did, yes.
Now, what about, you mentioned Morse second. What about Morse? Now, you were a bridge signaller. You still had to learn Morse, though.
Oh, yes, that was one of the basis of our job.
Now, how did they teach you Morse code?
Well, they just gave you sheet with the Morse code on, and you had to learn it by heart. And you started off. We had lamps were outside dotted around the establishment were like wooden posts with signal lamps on, and you'd start off very, very slowly, and gradually worked up to roughly 17 or 18 words a minute. And twice a week, we did an exercise in which we had to read 50 mixed letters and numbers. And judging by the percentage we got correct, we would stick to just doing 2 a week. If you reached a certain percentage, you only did those 2 a week. If you were very poor, you got extra in the evenings, extra exercises in the evenings.
And how did you do?
Oh, I did all right. Except once I was doing an exam, and the chap with me was writing down for me, he fainted on the spot. We're about halfway through, but otherwise I had no problems at all.
Now, did you do it on the buzzer as well, or was it just...
Oh yes, we did buzzer as well, but only to not to the qualified speed of a telegraphist.